Welcome, and let's first talk compliance. I'm Catherine Short, Partnership Marketing Manager at First Healthcare Compliance. Thanks for tuning in. This show is brought to you by First Healthcare Compliance as part of our commitment to provide high-quality complementary educational resources. We help create confidence among compliance professionals throughout the United States. Please show your support by taking a moment to provide a review on Google, Facebook, or iTunes. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. On today's episode, we are speaking with Donald A. Baleza, JD, MBA, CEO, and legal counsel of the American Association of Medical Assistants, AAMA, on the topic of expanded roles and duties for medical assistants during the COVID-19 era. The medical assisting profession has risen to the occasion as we have been dealing with the most serious health crisis in the last 100 years. Medical assistants have been asked by public health officials, managers of health systems, and licensed providers to assume expanded roles and perform tasks beyond their normal scope of work. Because of the breadth of their education and training, medical assistants have been able to adapt quickly to these new responsibilities. They have been called upon to work in non-traditional settings under the authority and supervision of a dedicated array of clinicians and administrators with whom they have not previously practiced. During this episode, we will discuss the laws that establish the scope of practice for medical assistants and to delineate the expanded tasks that may be delegated under these laws. The legal principles placing limitations on the scope of work will be explained, and the explained functions that are not delegable to medical assistants will be set forth. Before we begin, I would like to mention at First Healthcare Compliance, we strive to serve as a trusted resource for compliance professionals, and every month we celebrate their hard work and dedication with our Compliance Super Ninja recognition. For this episode, we're spotlighting Super Ninja Jessica Bird, Business Manager at Wayne Radiologists, who says that she enjoys most about working with Wayne Radiologists is that I get to be involved in all aspects of the daily operations, from financials and human resources to the daily IT and clinical operations. This has given me the opportunity to learn various skill sets and to develop close relationships with the employees and physicians within the organization. Congratulations, Jessica. Our team is honored to have the privilege of working with you. So hello, Don. A very warm welcome, and thank you for joining me today on First Talk Compliance.
Thank you, Catherine. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. So to start out, could you give our listeners an overview of your thoughts on the current situation in our country and where medical assistants fit into this in relation to COVID-19? I know demand often outstrips available appointments for testing and vaccinating. So where do medical assistants fit into all of this?
What we've seen during the COVID-19 pandemic is an unprecedented need for medical assistants to be able to use the full extent of their training and their competence and their expertise in areas such as performing nasopharyngeal swabbing for COVID-19 tests, also very prominently now administering COVID-19 vaccinations in vaccination centers and other places, and also because of the need for telehealth to extend healthcare to patients who may not be able to come into the office because of the COVID-19 pandemic. We are seeing medical assistants stepping up and working in places where they have not worked before, in acute care settings, in these vaccination centers, and sometimes even under other non-traditional licensed providers. Medical assistants have been working in pharmacies under pharmacists administering COVID-19 vaccinations. So we have seen medical assistants rise to the occasion and use the full range of their education and abilities and skills, and I expect that that will continue into the future.
That's wonderful. State by state, licensing laws can be very confusing and hinder professionals moving to another state. Do you think we will see federal licensing in the future?
I don't think we will see federal licensing because that would present a constitutional issue. The authority for licensing rests with the state governments under the Constitution. However, what we are seeing is multi-state licenses that several states are getting together and agreeing on the same licensing principles, the same examination, the same educational requirements, and issuing a license that may be valid in 8 or 10 or 12 states. We've also seen efforts at enacting compacts within certain professions. The nursing compact has been very successful. I think there are about 35 states that are part of that compact now. And what that means is that those 35 states have adopted similar laws, and a nurse who is licensed in one state can move to any of the other within the compact and be able to work fairly quickly without having to take additional courses or take another examination. Essentially, they just have to pay a fee to the Board of Nursing in the new state, and they are able to work very quickly. So I think we're going to see that in many professions, especially the health professions.
I know that we were talking about licensing. In medical assisting, do the medical assistants, do they get licensed or credentialed, or how does that work?
In almost every state, medical assistants are not licensed in terms of there being a mandatory educational and testing prerequisite. The one exception is the state of Washington. But what we are seeing is that more medical assistants are becoming nationally certified. So a license is a state credential and a certification is a national credential. And we are seeing medical assistants becoming certified at a higher rate because employers are wanting some proof of the knowledge and the skill of the medical assistants. So it's not a licensing situation throughout the country. It's mostly a certification demand that is occurring by employers.
How can I find the medical assisting scope of work laws for my state and specific information about COVID-19 related tasks that are delegable under the laws of my state and perhaps about credentialing for my state?
Yes, everyone is welcome to go to the homepage of the American Association of Medical Assistants website, which is www.aama-ntl.org. Again, that's aama-ntl.org. And on the homepage, if you go to the left column and click below State Scope of Practice Laws, you will be taken to the laws of all American jurisdictions, and you can find what the laws are, what my opinions are of the laws in the various states, and you'll get a very quick and comprehensive idea of scope of practice for medical assistance in your state. In terms of COVID-19 developments, we follow that very closely. And back on our homepage, if you go to the right column, you will see a list of COVID-19 articles and updates. And by clicking on all of the various articles, you will be able to get an idea of what medical assistants are permitted to do in the various states during this COVID-19 pandemic.
I heard you mentioned pharmacists or other clinical type of providers. Are medical assistants permitted to work under other licensed providers such as pharmacists and podiatrists and dentists?
Yes, that's a question that I'm receiving more frequently these days. Yes, because as I just mentioned, medical assistants are not licensed in any state except Washington. So therefore, they are categorized as unlicensed assistive professionals or personnel under the laws of the states. And the Pharmacy Practice Acts, the Dental Practice Acts, the Podiatry Practice Acts have language in them indicating that those licensed providers are permitted to delegate certain tasks to unlicensed professionals, and that would therefore include medical assistants. So, yes, medical assistants, even though they have not traditionally worked under pharmacists or EMTs, etc., because of the flexibility of the laws, they have been able to be employed as unlicensed professionals and be of great service to the patients of America.
Are medical assistants allowed to carry out standing orders of a licensed provider? And before we go over that, could you define what a standing order is as a review?
Absolutely. A standing order is a written order from a licensed healthcare provider that directs an allied health professional, such as a medical assistant, to take certain actions when certain situations arise involving a patient. Those orders have to be in writing and they are approved by the provider. And in terms of whether medical assistants are allowed under the law to carry out or execute those orders, depends on the following factors. First, the orders must be for tasks that are legally delegable to medical assistants under the state. So that's the first determination that has to be made. Is this standing order directing the performance of a task that is within the medical assistant scope of practice under state law, or is it a task that is not delegable to medical assistants? If the task is delegable to medical assistants, the next question is, under what degree of supervision can that task be done by a medical assistant? Under the laws of states, there are oftentimes distinctions between medical assisting tasks that may be done when the delegating provider is on the premises or in the office suite and immediately available. There are other tasks that can be done only when the licensed provider is actually in the same room as the medical assistant. And of course, those are more advanced tasks. And finally, under the laws of some states, there are procedures that can be done by a medical assistant when the licensed provider is not on the premises, but is available by telephone or video phone or some other electronic means. So if the task is one that can be done by a medical assistant, and if the provider is exercising the degree of supervision that's required by state law, and if the medical assistant is competent in that task, then the medical assistant is permitted to follow those standing orders and to carry out the tasks that are required by the provider's order.
Along those same lines, are there any states that allow medical assistants to practice independently without supervision or independently?
That's another good question, and the answer to that is there are no states that permit medical assistants to work totally independently. The laws of all states require that medical assistants work under the authority of a licensed provider, usually a physician, nurse practitioner, or physician assistant, although we've been mentioning the other non-traditional settings. And medical assistants are starting to work in those environments to a greater extent, or under the authority of a licensed professional, such as a registered nurse or an emergency medical technician. So there are no states that allow medical assistants to practice with total autonomy. However, there are some states that allow medical assistants to perform certain tasks when the delegating overseeing licensed provider is not physically present in the medical office or clinic or delivery setting. So there is general supervision in which the provider is available, as you mentioned, by telephone or video phone or some other electronic means. and the medical assistant therefore is able to consult with the provider if necessary, but there are no states in which the medical assistant can work totally independently.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Talk Compliance, brought to you by First Healthcare Compliance, as part of our commitment to provide high-quality complementary educational resources. We help create confidence among compliance professionals throughout the United States. My guest today is Donald A. Beleza, JD, MBA, CEO, and legal counsel of the American Association of Medical Assistants, AAMA, on the topic of expanded roles and duties for medical assistants during the COVID-19 era. Please show your support by taking a few minutes to provide a review of First Healthcare Compliance on Google or Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Don, I'm wondering if you could give us a little bit more information about medical assistants. I know offices employ CMAs, which are AAMA or RMAs, AMT, NCMAs, CCMAs, and medical assistants with other credentials. What's the difference between these credentials and where would we find medical assistants? What areas would we find them in? Would we find them in hospitals? Would we find them in home health care? Would we find them in offices? Could you give us an overview of that?
Yes, absolutely. Medical assistants, by definition, are educated and trained to work in outpatient settings, also known as ambulatory care settings, such as medical offices or clinics or other environments that are not inpatient. Now, medical assistants have been asked to work in inpatient settings in the last year, but by definition, medical assistants are educated to work in outpatient settings. They are able to perform both back office clinical tasks, such as phlebotomy, administering medications such as by injections, which would include vaccinations and immunizations. They are able to perform electrocardiography under the authority of a physician. They are able to measure vital signs and do other clinical tasks. They're also able to do front office administrative tasks, which have become much more extensive in this era of more governmental involvement and more complexity with third-party payers, various insurance companies. Now, medical assistants, by nature, are versatile. They're able to do the front office and the back office, the administrative and clinical. And those who meet the requirements, such as having education or experience, are able to sit for national certification examinations. All of the ones that you mentioned, the CMA, AAMA, the RMA, or Registered Medical Assistant of American Medical Technologists, and the Certified Clinical Medical Assistant, the National Certified Medical Assistant, etc. Those are national credentials. They are voluntary certifications. They are not mandatory state licenses. However, employers, because they are seeing the value of medical assistants having formal education and a credential, are beginning to require more frequently that medical assistants have a credential, have a certification that provides some accountability. It also demonstrates that the medical assistant has taken the effort to study for a national standardized examination, to pass that examination, and to be able to use the initialisms after the name of the medical assistant. Also, these credentials require medical assistants to recertify periodically, either by continuing education or testing. So we are seeing medical assistants becoming nationally certified. They traditionally work in outpatient settings, but they are starting to work in non-traditional settings because of the need during the COVID-19 pandemic for medical assistance to provide services in places other than the medical office and the clinic.
Is it legal for medical assistants to perform triage? And could you give us a brief description of what we would mean by triage in this case?
Yes, the key there is the definition of triage. I define triage as the interaction with patients or patient representatives over the phone or by other means, which requires the health professional to exercise independent clinical judgment and to make some sort of clinical analysis or assessment or evaluation. That is how I define triage. I define telephone screening as not having the element of independent clinical judgment or any element of clinical assessment or evaluation. My legal opinion is that the second category of the telephone screening, which involves the verbatim conveying of information approved by the licensed provider by the medical assistant to a patient, is something that is delegable to medical assistants, or the verbatim receiving of information from a patient for the licensed provider is another task that medical assistants are permitted to perform under the laws of all states. However, as I define triage, it's my legal opinion that medical assistants, because they're not permitted to exercise independent clinical judgment or to make clinical assessments or evaluations, are not permitted to perform triage, as I have just defined the term. Triage is limited to licensed health professionals or licensed providers. However, coming back to my definition of telephone screening, it's my legal opinion that that is a duty that may be delegated to knowledgeable medical assistants under the laws of all states.
That makes sense for sure. Do the Joint Commission standards put any restrictions on medical assisting scope of practice that are stricter than state laws?
That's another question that I don't receive that often, but when I do, it's often in the context of a clinic or a health system being visited by a Joint Commission auditor who is on site.
Right.
And so when this question arises, it's often quite a conflictual situation. Mm. The answer to that is that the Joint Commission standards for ambulatory care facilities state that they defer to the requirements of state law. And these auditors from the Joint Commission are only going to make sure that state law is followed in regard to what health professionals are performing, which tasks or procedures or functions. The Joint Commission standards do not have any separate requirements over and above what state law requires. So the answer to the question is that the Joint Commission standards do not establish any requirements other than what the state laws require.
Do you think the expanded scope of work for medical assistants will continue after the COVID-19 pandemic has subsided?
I definitely think it will. I think that the abilities of medical assistants to multitask, to do some tasks that they were not required to do traditionally, has changed the minds of policymakers as well as healthcare providers. And I expect, for example, that medical assistants will continue to have a more prominent role in telehealth, for example, being with patients in remote settings from wherever the licensed provider is, and gathering data for the provider in order for the provider to make a diagnosis. I think that will continue. I think the allowance of medical assistance to work under more liberal supervision, namely the provider being available by electronic means but not necessarily being physically present, has been shown to be effective with nasopharyngeal swabbing as well as COVID-19 vaccinations. And I think that will continue after the pandemic.
Thank you so much, Don. Do you have any other particular advice or things that you would like to add as we wrap up our show for today?
I do, Catherine. I'd like to emphasize again that medical assistants are an untapped resource in terms of healthcare professionals. I would encourage everyone to find out what medical assistants are permitted to do under their state laws. And once again, that can be found easily on our website. And also that the federal laws that have impacted medical assisting, such as the telehealth provisions of the CDC, that those provisions be incorporated into practice so that medical assistants are permitted to do a greater range of tasks and make full utilization of their knowledge and their competence.
Wonderful. Well, I wanted to thank you so much for being here today, Don. It's been a real pleasure and a real education. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, Catherine. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. And thanks to our audience for tuning in to First Talk Compliance. You can learn more about the show on our programs page on healthcarenowradio.com and lend your voice to the conversation on Twitter at FirstHCC or hashtag FirstTalkCompliance. You can also email me at KatherineShort@FirstHCC.com. I'm Catherine Short of First Healthcare Compliance. Remember, compliance is the key to achieving peace of mind.